Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title for this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It is program number 799, March the 30th, 1987. I read in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday the itinerary of the Pope visiting Argentina and Chile. And visit number 14 on his trip is a fairly small town in Argentina called Mendoza. I never was aware of the town of Mendoza, to tell you the truth, until the news account on CNN February the 20th, 1987, according to CNN, stated that Adolf Hitler had been buried in Mendoza a month earlier, January of 87. The same news account said that Eva Braun was still alive. I had that on broadcast number 794, February the 23rd of this year, of course. The cemetery is in Palmiro, 30 miles east of Mendoza. The same day that that report came out over CNN, the San Jose Mercury had an account of a scientific convention in Canada, in Ontario, Canada, where one of the papers presented was a discussion of many years' research on the dental records of Adolf Hitler that said the dental records that the Soviet Union had when they got a body out of the ashes in the bunker, buried in the bunker, was not that of Adolf Hitler, and the convention scientist, when presenting the paper, gave his reasons for having that opinion, and I had that on the air. Now, how strange is it that Karol Wojtyla, the Pope, is visiting Mendoza? Is this just a coincidence that was planned a long time ago, or does it have any symbolic references for people who know what's going on, as many people in Argentina talked and discussed the fact that Adolf Hitler had been alive? Now, think about the fact that Pope John Paul II, worked at Auschwitz during the war, during the extermination periods. He worked for IG Farben, a subsidiary of called Solvay Chemical. Farben supplied all the Zyklon B and poison gas for Auschwitz overseas. When the chemist who made the Zyklon B, Otto Ambrose, was released as a Nuremberg criminal, he was brought to the United States by none other than J. Peter Grace. Grace, of course, is active in the AFL-CIO organization throughout Central and South America that has recently been linked to Oliver North, to Project Democracy, the National Endowment for Democracy. So J. Peter Grace is not far from the Reagan administration with his suggestions on cutting costs. And also, Otto Ambrose was brought here by J. Peter Grace. So they evidently didn't consider these ovens and the killing of many, many millions of people to be a very serious crime. He was rewarded for that. Now, Grace is on the board of AmeriCares Foundation with headquarters in New Canaan, Connecticut, with William Simon. And the bulk of this program is going to be on accuracy in media. William Simon is also on the board of Accuracy in Media, as is Prescott Bush, who Simon and Bush are both Knights of Malta from the Vatican, and Bush is the brother of the former CIA director and currently the vice president, who has long links down to people in Bolivia, Central America, connected to Klaus Barbie, the notorious Barbie, and Licio Gelli, who provide the rat line for people like Barbie, got it through the Vatican. So how far away is the Vatican from a lot of Nazis or this particular Pope? Paul Marcinkus is wanted by the Italian government for money that's missing out of the Vatican Bank. They gave promissory notes for $1.2 billion that were put in 10 dummy fronts in Panama. And this money was used for the P2, the Masonic Lodge, headed by Licio Gelli, who was of the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, who built the rat line for people like Barbie and maybe 30,000 or more top Nazis to leave Europe by way of the Vatican. Gelli has worked closely with Francesco Pazienza and Michael Ledeen. Pazienza is on trial in Italy now for the Bologna bombing, and I read an article last week that he may at his trial bring up the name of Alexander Haig and Michael Ledeen, who are very much in the news now. When the Banco Ambrosiano scandal broke, the P2 story broke, what did the Pope do? The Pope from Solvay Chemical from Auschwitz. He called in Hermann Apps from Germany to help the Vatican Bank. Hermann Abst was president of the Deutsche Bank. He's still active there. He was president of it during World War II. Deutsche Bank wrote the salary for the Waffen-SS for Adolf Hitler for the Gestapo, and he also was a major board member of IG Farben. So would it be far-fetched if these people knew that Adolf Hitler actually was living in Chile, Argentina, Antarctica, and that he was buried finally, and the Pope is going to go through Mendoza? Is there some little joke that we don't know, because there are strong links of this Pope to Adolf Hitler, to Hermann Abst, to IG Farben, and to SS Himmler, the head of the Gestapo, who worked with Alan Dulles of the OSS and provided a way for these Nazis to leave this country. Now, a lot of people ask me on the talk show part of my program, those of you who subscribe to World Watchers get this one-hour tape, and many of you know that afterwards I have 1 hour of talk show, and people have called in, is there any good news? How come you only talk about bad news? Well, there's some very interesting good news today, and it's been taking place for the last few weeks, and I'll share it with you. One is the fact that Francesco Pazienza, behind the Bologna bombing with his links to the P2 and the Vatican, is in a jail in Italy waiting trial for that bombing murder. And, of course, he links to the Central Intelligence Agency and to the United States. Reverend Potter Gale is in jail. He was arrested in Las Vegas. He was founder of the Ministry of Christ. He's a leader of the identity movement. He is part of an organization that wants to cut the throats of every black and Jew in the United States. A miserable terrorist with roots going back to World War II and training with the Philippine guerrillas and coming to the United States and setting up a lot of racist organizations and plans here. Reverend Potter Gale is in jail and Pazienza is in jail. Franklin Camper, the man who runs a terrorist camp in Alabama, who's worked with top Nazis and Klan, has been under trial for a firebombing at a home out in San Bernardino. He got off the first time. One member of the jury refused to budge, and they retried it. These were nursery school teachers whose homes were bombed. The cars were bombed, and he came to California to set up the people who would do it. And Franklin Camper is most noted for training the Sikhs who are linked to the Air India crash, where so many killed, and to the Air India in Japan, where several people were killed in the locker room there. Now, Juan Perón's interior minister, Juan López Rega, has been, I don't know if he's under house arrest. He was picked up in Miami, and he was sent to Argentina. He's headed up the 3A death squads that worked with all of these people that I've mentioned, and sent death squads into Central America to train the rebels to fight the Sandinistas and to help this El Salvadorian government put down the rebels there caught wanting a revolution. Now, another partner in crime, the sixth partner in crime of all this, was just arrested, and it was in the paper today. So some tremendous changes are taking place. The man's name is familiar to those who are listening to World Watchers for a long time. It's Stefano Della Calle. And this is the way the story went in our Monterey Herald. Most of you have seen it in your newspapers, I hope. Caracas, Venezuela. Special agents arrested Stefano Della Calle, an Italian neo-fascist charged with the bombing death of more than 100 people in Italy. The security police announced yesterday in Venezuela. Della Calle has been a fugitive for 70 years, 17. He's one of the world's most wanted men. He will be sent back to Italy today. He was arrested in a Caracas neighborhood where he apparently lived for the past 3 years, and he also was in Peru. He fled to Peru after Klaus Barbie was picked up and sent to France and was arrested. Our security agents had been alerted that Della Calle had fled Bolivia, which indeed he did in 1983. When they went to the house, he tried to escape through a back door, but they caught him, and he congratulated them politely. He said it was the first time he had been caught. Della Calle, 49, used more than 20 aliases. He fled Italy in 1970, entered Venezuela in 1984, you see, after Barbie was taken to France. He had a Bolivian passport. Papers in the apartment, and this is the interesting part of this, included lists of drug traffickers Italian neo-fascist literature and a list of extreme rightists of Venezuela. Now, the extreme rightists of Venezuela linked to the Medellin cartel and to the Contras and those persons on trial now, defendants in the Christic Institute trial. And I wonder if they, I know the powers that be have known where De La Calle is for a long time, and I wonder if they had to pick him up to get rid of these lists that he was using or bargaining or blackmailing for. So it's necessary now to call an end to the game now that Mr. Leder Rivas has been arrested, the head of the Colombia cocaine cartel. This whole group from South America and Colombia link right up to Central America into Washington, D.C., into Florida and Washington and New York. And I think that they had to put the clamp on De La Calle, because if he has the list of drug traffickers, the Italian fascists, and the Italian extremists in Venezuela, then he also has the list of the Medellin cartel. And I'll do more about that hopefully in the weeks to come, because that again links to Merrill Lynch and Don Reagan's offices and E.F. Hutton. Now, De La Calle fled Italy in 1970. He was accused of involvement in 1969 in the bombing in Milan of the Banco Nazionale di Agricoltura. The blast killed 16 people, wounded 100. The case remained unsolved. He's wanted on other terrorism cases, two unsuccessful coup plots in 1970 and 73. Now, these were planned by NATO, by Richard Nixon's team, Michele Sindona, when Nixon was president. And the United States CIA was planning a coup in Italy in 1970 that also involved Prince Borghese, who is on the board of Permandex, the operation that was behind the murder of John Kennedy and many, many other people. And Stefano Della Calle is wanted in that coup plot. But again, I believe they had to pick him up because he links directly to James Angleton and Prince Borghese, and we're getting awfully close to the smoking gun of who killed John Kennedy when these kinds of people are around, and I think it was necessary to pull him in. He's wanted for a train bombing in August of 74 for the murder of an Italian judge, Vittoria Accorso, in 1976. In the 1960s, De La Calle founded the National Avant-Garde, an extreme right-wing group. He's been described as the uncontested leader of neo-fascism in Rome. Now, he never would have been the uncontested if he didn't have the CIA money that came out of Otto Skorzeny's pockets, Adolf Hitler's money that was released from the banks and safe deposits, put in the hands of Otto Skorzeny in Madrid. And that, of course, that office was a part of our Central Intelligence Agency office. In the Rebel magazine, the first issue that I wrote on the Nazis and the links to the Kennedy assassination, it goes into Skorzeny in the offices in Madrid. De La Calle is believed to have ties with Licio Gelli. You better believe that. The fugitive head of the secret Masonic Lodge, Propaganda Dewey. And that, again, connects to Henry Kissinger and Michael Ledeen and Francesco Pazienza. It says the Italian authorities said it was a criminal organization. Gelli and former intelligence officer General Pietro Musumeci and Colonel Giuseppe Bellamonte are on trial for the Bologna bombing. And, of course, they set up that Super Seize Me, which is the secret government inside of the Italian intelligence, which is identical to the operation that William Casey had Oliver North running inside the National Security Council, with the same people running our secret government that were assisting the Italian government at the same time. So with all of Contragate coming down and computers or safes maybe being tapped, and goodness knows what the Tower report found, the Tower Commission found, Stefanie De La Calle has been brought in. Now, there are two very good books on this subject, this tangled web, because I'm just giving you a quick overview. One is called Stefano De La Calle, written by Stuart Christie. I believe you can get it from Tom Davis at Research in Aptos. He has this book. It was published in London in 1984, and it begins right off the bat with James Angleton and Mr. Borghese, Prince Borghese, which are the direct connections to Permandex and to the murder of John Kennedy. The other book that is an excellent source of the material for these various people that I've listed, those six that are being apprehended now, or five of the six, the book is The Great Heroin Coup that I've referred to many times, published in 1980, written by Henry Krueger, published by South End Press. And again, Tom Davis has those books. Those two are very, very important to understand the subtleties of the trial going on now, the Bologna trial, Mr. Pazienza locked up, Alexander Haig running to run for president, Stefano Della Chaia being arrested and deported back to Italy. It all adds up to a nest of fascism that has been affecting countries in South, Central America. These particular people also have influences in the Middle East and Southeast Asia, but more than that area, it's Central and South America, which is predominantly Catholic and was probably 99% Catholic, and which is controlled very much by the Vatican and the drug traffic and the terrorism, the death squads that hold together to keep the government running the way that certain powers that be think it should be running. Now, I'm not going to do much this week on, I'm not going to do hardly anything on the warfare between the evangelists. I'll do more later, but I want to get to accuracy in media, so I'll just pass this off right now. This Jessica Hahn was put down by one night of adultery, and I'm sure most of you are seeing what is happening. Interestingly enough, she came from West Babylon and went down to South Babylon in Florida. She was fixed up with persons who wanted, obviously, to get Jim Baker, and they made tapes of their love affair, whatever it was. This wasn't the kind of thing where he sees a cute girl at the bar, has an indiscretion, and they separate. He separated from his wife. This was taped identical to Chappaquiddick or what Tony Lasowitz did and confessed to doing at the time of Watergate. Goodness knows where he is now. In 1969, he was on the island of Chappaquiddick. But this kind of blackmail and extortion and taking over the Baker Empire smacks of a real Chappaquiddick affair. She says she was drugged. I'm sure he was drugged. And the cameras were rolling. And then he builds up his empire. And then all of a sudden it falls. And there is Jimmy Swaggart and Jerry Falwell enjoying every minute of it. Jimmy Swaggart said yesterday at his church services that it's taken the minister's sexual indiscretion to get the press interested in evangelical ministry. If the news media got as excited as it has in the last 2 weeks, think what it is going to do when the trumpet sounds and every child of the living God gets up and leaves this world. Now, those are the kind of people you're talking about, the Armageddon mentality. These children are all going to die and go to heaven and leave this world. And he thinks this is just a glorious example of something coming down that illustrates the beauty of sacrificing to God, and the children will leave this world. These are very, very sick people. Now, the Tower Report, I don't know how many of you have it. It's really an amazing book. I never expected it to be so good. Forget what they left out or who they were. It has a lot of material in it. And among other things, they had a list of right-wing organizations that form these interlocking networks, and it will take years for students of history to appreciate the clues that are located in this one book, and many, many books and articles will come out. There's the National Endowment for the Preservation of Liberty, CAUSA, Reverend Moon's Church, which I mentioned on World Watchers, that hasn't even made a ripple or come to the surface yet, the National Defense Council, the American Conservative Trust, the Institute for Democracy, Western Goals. Now, you just take Western Goals and CAUSA alone, and you interlock into organizations such as Accuracy in Media, Reed Irvine's Accuracy in Media. You lock into the Japanese mafia, Ryosha Sasakawa, and the armament people ready for war, World War III, arming and not only using religious fronts, tax-free religious fronts like Moon, but very serious projects in South America and throughout the entire world under the organization of Moon's Church. And Western Goals is the epitome of their using police department computers tapped into Western Goals to take information about law-abiding citizens for the day that they have to be rounded up. Now, Nation Magazine has a brilliant article by Alex Coburn in this last issue, March 21st, or the one before last, and it is titled, Four Men in North Safe, The Use of Intellectuals. And that's a good word, intellectuals. The title is called Beat the Devil, which is a good title for his column. And Alice Coburn is referring to four people he refers to as the Nobel Prize winner, an East German refugee, and two of the most hyperactive bellboys of the Reagan era. Who are the four people he's talking about? And their names come up in regard to that C&G Foundation. That's the Gulf and Caribbean Foundation. If you have the Tower Report, it's in Appendix C, and it mentions the Gulf and Caribbean Foundation. And the men he's talking about are Elie Wiesel, Joachim Metra, Max Singer, and Michael Ledeen, none other than Michael Ledeen. Now, many of you get Nation, and for those of you who don't, or even to share, even if you do, I'm going to do more on this next week, but I just want to call attention to it, because I wrote to Elie Wiesel about Fritz Kramer. He wrote me this blank letter, pass it off. Now it seems that the intellectual Elie Wiesel, working with his friend Max Singer, the president of Boston University, is part of Ledeen's team to write an article praising the Sandinistas or the Contras, and being a part of this holy war with the Moonies, the Knights of Malta. Wiesel, who cries on television, please don't go to Bitburg, is repeating the Bitburg scenes, the Waffen-SS scenes down in Central America, working with these same people. The day he got his Nobel Peace Prize, peace in quotes, he went right off to Russia to kick Russian ass for civil rights, and now it turns out the Wiesel is linked down here. Of course, the Israelis are, right and left and otherwise, and they have been linked to death squads, and Wiesel had absolutely no interest in this man named Fritz Kramer when I wrote to him. I've had that response he had on the air before, and I'll share with you next week. But that's a good article, and Wiesel and Wiesenthal are the epitome of the slimy snakes that they are, but don't shed their skin. They carry the whole weight of their rottenness with them. And someday, the story of the Jewish traitors, the Jugendrat that Hitler called them, the Jewish traitors who this time know better, who work with the likes of Licio Gelli and Francesco Pozzi and Stefano Della Calle, who approve of their actions, who let them set their foot into these countries and decimate native populations. These are the kind of people that are revered by those persons with a memory of the Holocaust, but with absolutely no glasses on to see the world as it is after Germany, in quotes, lost the war, to see it as it really is and wonder what are Ledeen, Jewish, Wiesel, Elliot Abrams doing with these people with such a track record of killing, all in the name of anti-communism. Now, I want to get back and continue what I started last week about accuracy in media, because this is very, very important. And I'll do the greater part of this program and maybe the next 2 weeks on that. Just as I put everything aside to do two broadcasts on Nicholas Daniloff, I want to do two or three. As hard as it is to put the other articles away, I'm going to do it, because this is a sounding board of portending the future, things that have happened in the past that we couldn't control, but this is right in our own area, so it's very, very important. And of course, it affects me directly, because David Emery up at KFJC has World Watchers on 4 times a week. Now, if the president of the university decides to stop their broadcasting, I will tell you now that I will continue broadcasting. If you're not within the listening area of Kazoo, write to me at any time they decide to stop their program, One Step Beyond, if they decide, and you can get my tapes by subscription. And at that point, it's up to you individually to make copies and send to people, because the avenues of education and instruction are obviously closing off. Now, I read this letter last week. I'm going to read it one more time. Dr. Tom Clement, President, Foothill College, Los Altos Hills, California. It was dated January the 27th. Dear President Clement, enclosed are the tapes and transcript of portions of them which I discussed with you on the phone. So he's been in touch with him. The transcript skips around and does not indicate where the breaks are. I did it for my own information rather than with the idea of providing it to you. It will give you a good idea of some of the more outrageous statements being made over KFJC. I will be interested to learn what action you take. Sincerely yours, Reed Irvine. Now, Reed Irvine has accuracy in academia and accuracy in media, and from his campus report, this is what he wrote about the program that Niptuck and David Emery put on. But keep in mind that we associate, you know, Dave and I are very close, exchange information. And what we're putting on is similar. Our styles are different. And they're talking, Reed Irvine, rather, is talking about David Emery. He's not mentioning Nip Tuck, interestingly enough, but David Emery, and not mentioning World Watchers, but singling out Dave. This is the way the article goes. Kooks on the loose, one step beyond sanity. Have you heard that the United States government may be engaged in an insidious plot to kill off political liberals, people involved in affirmative action programs, and people involved with helping the poor? Did you know that this was being done by somehow giving these people cancer so that they would appear to die of natural causes? If you don't know about this, it's because you haven't been tuning in to radio station KFJC, a station funded and operated by Foothill College of Los Altos Hills, California. He has the letters wrong, but I'm sure he knows what he's doing. He wrote it KFCJ. It's KFJC. Foothill is part of the California vast system of public higher education, located 35 miles south of San Francisco, serving Silicon Valley. Now, that's a good warning note that there is a vast system of public education, and Silicon Valley is one of the key words to security. Okay. Its FM radio station, run by students and by the college, is supposed to provide training in broadcasting to equip students to go out and get jobs in the real world. But the world, as seen from KFJC, is one that makes the conspiracy theories of Lyndon LaRouche seem tame by comparison. When it isn't broadcasting punk rock, it is airing kook talk. Two of its stars are Nip Tuck and David Emery, who host a regular talk show called One Step Beyond. It is at least one step beyond sanity. Campus Report has obtained a tape of a program that Tuck and Emery aired on November the 9th, and I understand a woman from the military in San Francisco sent it to Reed Irvine. It began with Emery discussing at length the obituary of Sylvia Jacobson, affirmative action director for San Francisco Civil Service Commission, who just died of cancer at age 40. Jacobson had been highly praised by San Francisco Mayor Dianne Feinstein. Tuck and Emery were not interested so much in Jacobson's career as in the cause of her death at such an early age. Emery explained his interest, saying, "There are a lot of obituaries like this appearing in the newspaper, people who would appear to be political liberals, people who are involved with affirmative action programs, people who have been active on the behalf of black or minority organizations, people who have been active in liberal causes of all kinds, people who are involved in helping the poor, providing legal services for the poor, things of this kind. A lot of people like that in their late 30s or 40s and early 50s, the most productive period of people's lives, there are a lot of these obituaries appearing, and what we're asking is how many of these people have been dispatched by the authorities?" Now, I'll continue. Now, Reed Irvine is quoting David Emery, how many have been dispatched by the authorities, their broadcast December 9th, and that is the key question. That is probably what was irking Reed Irvine, and he singled it out. He's got some other quotations, but I think the most untold story of this whole time period since World War II is the systematic elimination of people. A precedent was set in Germany with the murder of 400 people, politicians, all documented, who opposed the rise of fascism and had to be killed or were witnesses to those killings of the people who were aware of fascism in order to make Adolf Hitler be properly elected in 1933. Getting back to Reed Irvine, this is the way it goes. Emery continued, "People may first be inclined to say, gosh, what a crazy idea that our government might be going around assassinating political liberals by cancer. Well, we've looked at the facts, and it is a matter of fact that our own national security establishment has dispatched people of political persuasion, such as John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. People like that have been gotten rid of in the past. It is not unreasonable to suppose the people who got rid of them would like to get rid of other people like them. While we focus on the Nazi element, it might seem crazy to people to think that the United States government might be assassinating people by cancer. But it is crazy to think that a bunch of Nazis might be willing to freely murder their political opponents? Obviously not. They don't make any bones about it." That's what we're getting into, and that's the reason we focus on the Reinhard Gehlen organization, the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo men who moved into our own intelligence system shaped it to a large extent, as well as openly were sympathetic to pro-Nazi elements such as the World Anti-Communist League and with intersections to Western goals. Obviously, these people have a lot of power. I'll take a one-minute break here and get back to those thoughts that David Emery was saying and show why Reed Irvine's porcupine sticks were up in the air and why it is important to him to try and stop this kind of broadcasting any longer.